Sunville UMT conference call.
Are we on mute or can I not talk about me? I was going to say something like, can I talk about Mesa now or are we on mute?
They can barely hear you because the recorder barely picks you up.
I have this soft voice now that I've been soft and sensitive ever since my nasal surgery.
Inviting.
Calming.
Exactly. Draws people in.
That's right. And that's a true score. Nail.
Yeah?
Don't get uptight. I don't get mad, I get even.
I think that's why I can be so calm and collected.
I have trouble with that.
No, you go volunteering me for stuff.
Mm, full of alcohol.
Let Tammy deal with that. So did you see I took the Fitterwig meeting minutes lesson?
No, I didn't, because I didn't get a copy.
I don't think Lindsay has sent them out yet.
Why'd you do that?
Because it's what I will go back to doing. You don't take the SCOM meeting.
Tammy, are you on yet?
Either. We're on. Okay, let's go through and see who's on the phone. We'll start with EPA.
Rick Kruger, Oregon Fish and Wildlife. Harry Frederick, Small Fisheries. Scott Pheasant, BPA. Jason Sweet, BPA. Matt Mesa, USGS.
Ben Hausman, John Rarisich, Bonneville Dam.
We have Tammy and Byrne here with Portland District.
Byrne?
Yeah!
Cool.
How you guys doing?
Bernie's there.
Yeah, I'm in my old office here with Tammy.
I've allowed him to come back into the office.
She put out a line on the floor. I'm not allowed to cross it, though.
Which one's Felix?
Dave Wills is here also.
Good.
All right, so we're just missing Lors. He said he would try to call in. Having a party. All right, and then we have Smith Root individuals.
John Parkin.
Rick Crum.
Brandon Byrne.
And Shane Scott.
All right. So y'all have the coordination form. You've all seen that?
Yes.
And that is what we are talking about. So if somebody would like to start.
I guess one thing I'd like to hear first is what Matt Mesa's take is on the Didson camera and the ability to actually do the work that you guys are planning to do this year.
Good question. Up till yesterday afternoon, we were feeling kind of sheepish. Things were not going well. Everything with the camera mounting and getting the camera in place was fine. When we really started to hone in on getting an image and setting the camera up and doing preliminary testing with a big fake fish we had and other devices, we were trying to set up our field of view and get our image dialed in. It really wasn't looking very good. And yesterday, we were at the dam again doing some really what was amounting to the final, as good as we could get the camera and image set up. And we filmed for a couple of hours. Just right at the about a couple of meters downstream of the array, and we got to see about
about a meter to 2 meters inside the array. And sure enough, we had some fish pass. We had some salmon come through, about four or five, six of them in about a 5 minute span. And we looked at the films yesterday, and we were very pleased and very surprised at what we saw. We could really see the fish much better than we ever thought we could, particularly their tails. See them moving around and swimming. However, you know, I've told other people yesterday that I think on a scale of 1 to 10, I've kind of backed off. I'd say it's probably about a 6. You can clearly see the fish. I mean, you know they're there. The field of view that we have right now is probably somewhere in the range of about 3 meters. Looking at the bottom of the array and just downstream of it. We were, I think Chris is there right now. He was doing some filming today, obviously with the array off. We're just trying to capture some more footage of fish going through so we can get a better feeling for ourselves about what it is we'll actually be able to do, what it is we'll be able to tell. I'm not sure that we will unequivocally be able to categorize an animal into one of those four categories, but I do think we will be able to see more overt behaviors such as stopping, hesitating, and fish turning around and bolting downstream, whatever it is they may do.
You're able to really, if you can see the fish.
Yeah, you can see the fish. They're big. You can see them.
But you're having trouble seeing the facial expressions.
Yeah, the facial expressions, yeah. We can see their body shape and particularly their tail.
Mm-hmm.
See them swimming when they come into the field of view.
You can actually see tail beats, so you can tell if there's a reaction of some sort.
Yeah, in fact, we saw them yesterday. We can actually see the beginning of the array. We know where it starts. You can actually see the line because it reflects a signal back to the camera.
Uh-huh.
You can actually see the start of the array, and we saw a couple of fish yesterday kind of come up to it. And they looked like they were just kind of milling around, you know, like you might see them at the fish viewing window.
Yeah.
And then they kind of went left, went right, went into the array a little bit, kind of fell back down a little bit, and then went on up. So that's kind of what we saw. It was pretty interesting. We have no idea what it means, but
some baseline information without the array on.
Yeah, nothing was on, and that's what we're doing today. Just collecting video, just collecting. There's lots of fish going through, or at least there's lots of fish going through the dam. We don't know how many are actually using the UMT, but we were encouraged.
Well, I think we're going to struggle here a little bit with how to move forward. So it's important to get from you the feeling that it's worth pursuing.
Yep. And right now, just based on that, and I want to look at more video. I'm hoping we get some more fish to look at today. But right now, Gary, what I would say to you guys is that it looks like we will be able to see fish, and we should be able to provide qualitative information on some sort of overt behaviors they might make if they hit the field.
Okay.
Around and or bolting or burst swimming, but we'll only be able to see that for, you know, like I said before, our field of view is only about 3 to 4 meters, something like that.
Yeah. Well, you'll still capture the initial reaction, whatever it happens to be.
We'll capture the, and we moved the camera today a little bit closer to the array, so our anticipated field of view now is about a meter below the start of the array, and about 3 to 3.5 meters inside the array, which should take us to a little bit beyond the first sort of hot electrode. So if something's going to happen, when they first encounter that field, we should be able to see it as long as they are closer to the bottom than they are. We won't be able to see fish that are probably mid water column and above. The cone just isn't there because we have the camera angled towards the bottom. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are for lack of a better term, there are blind spots.
Right.
So, but the fish that we do see in the field of view, we should be able to characterize their behavior. It's just hard to say right now whether we
can quantify that.
Yeah, whether we'd be able to take each fish and say it's a category one, a category two, a category three.
We may have to change our categories a little.
Yes, we may have to back off on that a bit. I don't know. We just don't have enough film right now, but that's the best update I can give you.
Okay. I guess that's. I just wanted to make sure that what we do is that's worth pursuing, and it sounds like it is based on your feeling about that. Was there any chance of improving the view?
We feel we have been working with our two Dixon experts here, but more importantly, really been in quite a bit of contact with the Dixon folks themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We feel after last week, we've probably exhausted the possibilities that exist to try to get a better image. We think we're there. We just don't see it getting any better, and I think Bill Hanna at Dixon agrees with us. It turned out what we think is going on, you guys, is that, and this may not surprise some of you, but we really think that the bubbles from the turbulence in that UMT channel, it's a lot greater than we ever thought it was. And it bubbles, even very small bubbles, really present difficulties to getting very, crystal clear Dixon images. And that was what we were struggling with. And so we think we've got things set up computer-wise and camera setting-wise and the angle and stuff like that, that it's as good as it's going to get.
Okay.
And like I said, you can see the fish. So they're big.
So then, okay, good. Thanks, Matt. That kind of takes us to the issue then of why we're discussing today, and that's that we have a undetermined but somewhat significant number of trapped juveniles in the array. Shane, you had some ideas about how we might get fish out of there?
Yeah, first of all, some of the Smith Root folks were out at the dam today and took another picture of the viewing window, and just a rough count, there's less than 75 fish in that window. So it appears like they're moving through.
What time were they here today?
What time were you there?
We arrived on site there at 9 a.m. and went down and took those pictures at around 9:30, quarter to 10.
11:30, there was 175 in the window.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they can move behind all those panels, so if they get spooked, they just move down out of the window and back and forth, so.
Right. But I'm just wondering if they're moving through the system.
John, do you see any reduction?
No.
Okay.
So we might have them trapped on the other side as well as this side.
Yeah.
I mean, there are lots of fish there, so it seems to me that the entry must be fairly easy for them, which would imply that the exit is probably easy too. So they may just be.
What you guys get? Put those.
Just kind of a predator. Behavior here, and they may move on.
Well, that's a big maybe for me to take on faith right now.
Yeah, I agree with that, because we don't know how they're getting in, and we don't know whether or not there is an exit for them. Because I thought this thing was flush up against the wall, so I'm not quite sure why there's even a cavity there.
Rick, I'd like to hear the Smith Roots folks' take on how
these fish are getting in there since they understand the antenna.
Well, we found out when we put the array in, that the structure of the array's in, that the concrete wall waves probably 1.5 inches from a flat plane. And so we actually had a little difficulty fitting the array in certain places. So there is sometimes no gap, sometimes maybe up to 1.5 inches gap. And I think on the upstream end, on the east wall, we actually filled in that gap with more panels to stop bigger fish getting in. But I'm sure there are gaps all through the system that these fish could go straight through.
And so they tried to seal the upstream end of the frame, figured that would keep fish out. But the water level in the UMT is also almost flush with the top of the side panels. There's some thought that the fish may be getting over top.
Are those, there's a fairly large gap between the walls and the side panels at the top?
Yeah, it'd be 4 inches.
There's a couple panels where there is an opening where it's maybe 2 to 3 inches wide or deep, if you want to say, but if the water flow got up above those panels, they could come over the top. So.
Okay.
That's a thought as they got up and over into this area behind the frame. But then, according to John, our engineer, says there's, and then folks on site, the those fiberglass frames are real straight up against the concrete that has voids in it. Not voids, but
waves.
Waves.
And that's part of the construction of the UMT had some waves in that, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, okay, one other thing I think would be good to explore with you guys is how can this array be taken out and put back in again, allowing these fish to get out of there and reliably seal it or at least get it into place?
Well, I think first we need to explore whether it's a problem with them being in there.
I'd like to hear your take on whether or not it can be pulled out and put back in.
Well, it can be pulled out. We have to bring in a crane. It's a major exercise, but it could be done.
And it could be put back in.
It could not be put back in with water in there at that level.
No, you would have to dewater it to get it back in.
Oh, you would?
Yeah. No. It would not be possible to reinstall that unit.
Yeah, water velocity is too high in there, and it'd be like a big kite. The core dewatered.
If you could stop the water. I mean, dewatering completely, that's a problem.
Right.
Yeah, if you could stop the water.
If you could stop the flow, yeah, you could possibly put it in there and sink it again.
Mm-hmm. Bonneville Project, can we do that?
Stop the flow?
Yeah. Put the end gate in.
Good.
Without having to dewater the entire thing. You have to put the gate in up above.
Yeah, the only thing you wouldn't know is if you're smashing fish when you put
it
in.
Yeah, that's a problem. Okay.
So it seems to me the fish are actually not in the electric field because there's an insulating panel between them and the field. So it would seem to me that what we ought to do is have some observers at the window and turn the field on and see whether there's any effect at all on the fish.
Well, that's one thing we can do. That doesn't help the trap fish any.
I mean,
we can look at that to see what the effect of the use of the electric array is, and that might be interesting in itself, but that still doesn't change the fact that the fish are in there.
Well, I don't know whether we know whether the fish are in there temporarily or permanently.
Well, they'll be temporary because they'll die and rot and float out eventually. But
if they don't move on.
Yeah, if they don't move on in a good shape. Okay, the other exploration I wanted to do was, is there a way to open those panels up, leave the frame in place, open the panels up and let fish out?
It could be done, but then I think what you're going to do is you'll see bigger fish go in there.
But they'll have a way out.
Well, lamprey may go in and accumulate, but there's two ways of doing that. One would be to shut things down, put a diver in, remove panels, shoo as many fish out of there as you can, put things back together again, and then go ahead, water back up and go. The other would be to go in and actually cut some slots in the panels that would allow egress in or out.
Maybe it's not open on the downstream end. Maybe they
you guys thought about either of those options?
Maybe it can fit out on the side. Or if it's tight in some places.
I would really like to establish first if the fish have a way to get out themselves. Is there any way that we can do that?
Did you say that there are areas where the array is tight against the wall because the UMT wall is wavy?
Yes, there are areas where it's tight, and there are areas where there's a space.
So it's quite possible that we have pockets where fish could get in and maybe be stuck, because if it's tight, then they can't squeeze through there, though water may be able to?
Well, if they can get in, they can certainly go out the way they came in.
Sure. In theory, juveniles could swim against flow, but that's not generally what they're programmed to do.
I'm just trying to explore the options of what we can do, because we may end up in a situation very likely where folks on this phone aren't going to be happy with going forward with fish trapped in there.
Right, right.
So I just want to explore what options there are for getting fish out actively now, rather than waiting and hoping and having that not happen.
Right, right. But I mean, so folks don't think it's possible that fish could move down through the system, through the voids. I mean, you are guessing. Yes, this is a guess.
Yeah,
and we don't know what kind of egress options they have. So
would it be possible to turn the array on and test for a few days while we try to figure out a solution to this?
No, watch the reaction of the juveniles first as we turn it on.
I'd say a few days, but I think turning it on initially to see what happens, yes.
Well, right, do that initially and see if the juveniles react. If they do not, then actually conduct a few days of the adult test so we get at least something.
Well, I'm going to leave that to Dave, but I mean, I think they're mostly Spring Creek fish that are in there, but we may be talking about not just 150 fish or so, but we may be talking about 1,500 or more in there. So,
right.
Right. But how long do you think they can stay and really have no effect?
Well, the picture I saw, I could see fish that looked already a bit emaciated. I don't know if that's just the way Dave raised his fish or what, but...
Thanks, Gary.
Sorry.
Actually, trying to have to swim really hard, or are they just able to just stay in there because it's a good void?
Well, they'll get out of there if they can. They don't want to be in there. I mean, I think that they don't want to be in there. They're trapped in there. And
well, I guess I'll have to chime in here. I just wanted to listen for a while. But
thanks, Dave.
I guess I'm a little disappointed, because it sounds like a lot of people are just ready to say, "Oh, let's just see what happens," because we think such and such is the reality. Well, I can't go there right now. And I guess I'm a little disappointed also in the fact that there's no real solution offered. Nobody's jumping up and saying, well, let's figure out if they're really trapped or not. And to me, that's the bottom line. If you can get in there and convince us that fish can get in easily, or not easily, but they can get out easily, then that's a different story completely. But I haven't heard anybody offer up something like that.
Yeah, Dave, I want to say that I agree with you there, and it's not going to be okay to just let it go.
But that's why I'm trying to explore the options here of what can we do.
No, and I agree, Gary. I want to hear what can we do.
But yeah, I want to hear more about
what can we do.
We can shut things down. This is safety issues. I realize all that, but we can get a diver in there, and it also means disruption to adult passage. Well, if we can get a diver in there to do at least get these fish that are in there out and take a look at the panel as it sets, we can get a better idea of where the gaps are, you know, what the configuration of this thing is, I'm worried about not only what we have going on right now, but back in March, I saw a juvenile fish in there that certainly wasn't a Spring Creek fish that I didn't, at the time, think it was actually trapped. I didn't realize there was a big plexiglass thing there. And it was a juvenile salmonid of either a coho or a chinook. Certainly would be a wild listed fish. That concerns me because there weren't many fish out there at the time, and that was like about a 60 millimeter fish, so it probably was actually seeking out places to hide like that area. But what I'm concerned about is that also we have another Spring Creek release coming up, plus the run of, you know, the run of large will be coming through there, so we could get a few fish in there. I mean, it's not unlikely for this to happen again. So just releasing these fish isn't enough. I want to make sure that either doesn't happen again, or that if it does happen, these fish get away out.
This is the array that goes across.
Yeah, but please don't think we're not taking this seriously, and we just wanted to hear folks' level of concern, where folks were at. You know, the thought was, if we're, you know, the photos we had from this morning, there were fewer fish, but apparently later there's the same amount, if not more. So, no, we're just listening right now. There are other options. We sat down for about 20 minutes before this call to consider those. One, I've talked with Tammy and Dennis Schwartz and sent some emails back and forth to Bonneville's project staff, is raising the water elevation in the UMT to give fish an access, a way to get out of this area, and I'm told that will bring the systematic criteria. But, you know, so that was one option we did explore. And another one, structural-wise, we need to get the engineers and electrical folks in here from Smith Root, and what would be the consequence of cutting holes in the system. And it sounds like it may be an option.
It can certainly be done.
Okay.
It would allow some leakage field in behind the panel.
If we did a high up, it's probably okay.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions then. If you're just putting the field in behind there where the fish are, that probably doesn't do any good.
Well, it would be much weaker than what it is in the main part of the structure.
Okay.
And that in the main part of the structure is that theoretically won't affect adults, and juvenile or smaller organisms are even lesser affected. So, I mean, you're making some leaps of faith, but...
Are there any differences in how that field leaks in there based on how you cut the holes? I don't know if there's...
As to whether you cut them vertically or horizontally, you mean?
That's around small holes, large holes, things like that. I don't know.
Overall, not really. You know, very localized, very close to where it is. Yeah, there would be some differences, but the overall general effect, there really isn't, no.
Okay.
I'm not sure that's a very viable solution anyway, because if you put the holes down toward the tail end of it, but the wall comes up tight against the panel somewhere in between, the fish still have access to where the holes are.
Is that true that the panels actually contact the wall in places, or is it just the frame?
Just the frame.
I think there's space
all the way along
between the panel and the wall that there wouldn't be a seal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Have you guys considered taking a pump and pumping water into the area between and flooding it so it overtops?
I guess that's why we're having this call. We're open to anything.
The lift, maybe.
Did I hear you guys right and say that the walls of the array do not actually come in contact with the concrete walls? There actually is space in there. Is that true?
The white plastic wall of the array does not contact the cement wall of the UMT structure.
Okay, so there is a space from the wall to the concrete structure, and there's gaps. Gaps could be anywhere. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a fiberglass reinforced plastic frame. What's the
3 inches? 3 inches square.
Okay. 3 inches square. That's what the structure. That's the structure that's down in there. So there's a 3 inch gap, and then on that the cutting board material's attached. So there's a 3 inch gap along both sides of this whole system. And so you have these ribs every 10 feet that run vertical along the concrete. half inch gaps as you run, as you start at the very top of the system and run down to the bottom of the UMT, there's gaps along that. I mean, there's areas where you can stick your finger through.
Right.
Because of the fluctuate, the variation in the concrete. So that's why, you know, picture yourself a fish, you get inside this thing, you move down through the next panel, you go up or down and move down. I mean, that was the first thought when we saw this picture this morning, is that must be what they're doing. They're moving out. Now, it's,
you know. But they can only go as far as the next downstream brace.
Oh, that downstream brace has gaps in it.
Oh, it does. Okay.
It's some of them. It may it contacts the concrete at points, but that concrete's not straight up and down.
Gotcha.
There are gaps along that brace.
What we don't have any idea of, I don't think anybody does, is how long, how big those gaps are, and how consistent they are from brace to brace.
Yeah, and do we want fish having to squeeze through something that's not much wider than their body width?
No.
Not if we can help it.
Tammy or Ben, do you guys know how common it is for the water level and the UMT to raise a few inches on a 24-hour period?
It should maintain a fairly constant elevation because it's controlled by FV6-9, but if you have a high or low forebay event, it will adjust the water level in there.
By how much?
It doesn't change much.
No, it doesn't. It's like a tenth of an...
You're below the flow control section that normally adjusts with forebay, so that area doesn't change much. Inches? A couple of inches?
Maybe.
Yep. So how far is the window... how far is the window from the upstream edge of the array? I can't recall off the top of my head. Is it more centered in the middle of the array, or is it towards the
upper end?
There are four modules to the array.
Yeah.
And the window, I think, is in the one that's second from the downstream end.
Gotcha. Okay.
Second from the downstream end?
The upstream end.
No, yeah. From the downstream end.
The downstream end, okay. Huh.
Because the initial idea was to put the window right where the... electrode is. Well, that's where it is. But we had to move the whole system away from the viewing window. That's where you don't see it all.
Yeah. Hmm. So, well, you know, my guess is that there's probably gaps on the upstream edge of that array. And when those fish come around that corner, it's very turbulent there. Lots of water in there, lots of tricky stuff. So if there were gaps of an inch or 2 inches along the upstream edge of the device, it seems that's a logical place for them to become entrained.
But see, that was where...
That's how they get down. Now, let me finish.
Sure.
It seems, but then that begs the question, how do they get down? Why are we seeing them at the window? And it can only be that there's more gaps than we think there are at each successive downstream brace, for example, or fish are, in fact, getting over the top in certain areas. And these guys, you know, as everybody probably knows, they're jumpers. They'll leap and fly and all that kind of stuff. But... So it is a little bit of a mystery, but...
I'm not sure that the sub-yearlings probably do much jumping.
Are these subs, or were they...
Yeah, I think they're, from what I've been hearing and seeing, they're probably mostly Spring Creek. I mean, we had, what, Dave, 8 million fish? 8 million subs?
We had about 8 million coming from Spring Creek and a little wide, plus another 2.5 million or so for yearlings.
Yeah, these look pretty uniform in size, and they look like your subs for the most part.
That's what I thought.
So, and I doubt they're jumping over. I think there were so many fish coming down through the system that they tend to get into just about everything. So, you know, that's what's happened here. But it's going to happen again. You know, we have another large release scheduled in May.
And then we got run-of-the-river fish.
The river fish coming down, and some of those are little guys, too. So,
well, if... Yeah, you know, what have we seen in terms of the passage of those fish through the bypass system. Does that tell us anything about how long these fish may have been in there?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's an interesting point, yeah. The Spring Creek, quote, little white release index peaked, the 10th, but the 15th at 430,000. And it's been dropping. Today it was about 11,500. So theoretically, if all things are even, the numbers of fish have dropped dramatically. And I was hoping to see a substantial reduction behind the window, but I'm not hearing that.
I understand that this frame was designed to seal on that front end to avoid just this situation. So,
well, no, I know we were. I know everybody was trying to do the right thing. It just hasn't worked out that way.
Yeah, that's why I'm wondering if they're coming in through the front, the upstream gaps in the upstream end, or if they're getting over the top. Just kind of thinking out loud.
So a possible solution might be to add more water behind the panel with either an inch and a half hose, ram it to the bottom, and turn it on.
Yeah.
You also might be able to tell how much, because of how much water it takes to overtop it.
Flush them out?
No, right. Flush them out.
Well, it might. But you also be able to tell if it leaks a lot. It's supposed to be flushed.
Yeah, you'll never flush them out unless you have a lot of water. Airlift might work, but I don't think you're going to flush them out. They'll just swim against it.
You mean like a compressor? What if you blow air on the bottom?
Yeah, that you could airlift them out as long as you had something to replace the flow that's going in, that's coming out. But
so if you get them out, how are you going to keep them from getting back in?
System too.
What's that, Tammy?
If you get them out this time, how are you going to keep them from getting in later and lamprey from getting in there? Which Tom's not on the call, but I know that was his concern.
Yes, I'm on the call.
Oh, you're there.
I've been waiting. Up in, but you guys didn't get me so much.
I thought you were lurking.
Yeah.
Lurking. Well, what about, you can get in there with a stick with a wire on it, a gauge of some kind, and see what kind of gaps you have between those ribs and the wall. Just to see what opportunities the fish have to move out. I mean, if it's tight or in, yeah, exactly, either way. Maybe see where the fish are getting in, if there are opportunities to get out.
Could you lower a video camera down there with a light?
Yeah, I don't know if we have. Does anybody have a video camera that small, 3 inches?
We do,
but yeah,
that would be really hard to do.
It's actually more difficult because there is a rib at the top that closes it off.
Oh, there is?
Yeah.
Okay. So there's a rib on the top?
There's a rib at the top and there's a rib about halfway down.
So there's no open space at the top then?
Well, it's only open where there is a space between the rib and the concrete.
Right, so it's just subject to the waves of the concrete or the...
Yeah.
Okay, that I guess I had in mind that there was maybe a wide gap at the top, like the 4-inch gap. Okay.
That's the way I was thinking of it based on the earlier description.
No, okay, well that kind of shuts off that idea.
Well, the most reasonable thing to do, I think, is to send a diver down and just cut out holes.
Yeah, I was thinking a diver at least to look at it and see if... of course, a diver's not going to be able to tell what's behind the panels that are opaque. So... you just have to cut and hope for the best.
Well, what do you mean, Gary?
Well, the panels, the only panels that are clear, the way I understand it, is the one at the window. Everything else is opaque, so you can't just go in there and look to see what's going on behind the other panels.
No.
And you can't look to just see what the gaps are like behind the other panels.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I was hoping that a diver, it'd be nice if we could just look instead of trying to feel our way into this thing, which doesn't tell you much, I don't think. If a person could just get in there and look at it, you could see, there's lots of gaps between the frame and the wall, and fish will easily get out, and don't worry about it. Versus, we really don't know. We kind of felt around in there a little bit, and there's a couple of gaps. How do you judge that?
Right.
Put a fire in there, but trying to get an idea of what the gaps are like is you're just feeling around.
Yeah.
Finally.
Hey, Gary, how large a hole would you need for a fish to come out of a 6-inch opening?
Oh, no. No, these fish would come out in a couple of inch opening would be huge.
So if you sent a diver in there with the rotating saw or something, I mean...
Yeah, you could do that and cut slots in it. That's just, it gets back to the electric field issue and getting behind the frame, and the idea of the panels were to insulate the field. So how does that affect the test?
One 3-inch hole in each or two 3-inch holes in each?
Well, I would think it would be two, above and below that cross member, that cross frame between them. There's two panels stacked on top of each other on each side. So if you punch the hole, you know, a quarter of the way up and a quarter of the way down.
Is there a way to punch a hole and actually make it so we can open and close the thing from up above? I know I'm talking about a lot of work here, but...
Hey, have you seen that camera mount? These guys can do anything.
I know that the Walla Walla District has come up with some pretty wild ideas for their lamprey slots, but...
It's possible to imagine it, but you would probably have to dewater it to put it in.
You know, the UMT is going to be dewatered this winter if you wanted to reevaluate the array and perhaps redesign it.
That's an unfortunate question I've got is, I mean, we had 9,000 fish over the ladder, and I think a fair majority are using the UMT. I mean, what time frames are we talking of here? Because, I mean, I really am apprehensive about trying to shut off a primary passage route for adults for a very long period of time.
I was thinking at night, they got in there at night, one night.
Yeah, you can punch bunches of holes in one night.
I think that'd probably be okay.
Yeah, I mean, if you could do it like one night, it's one night.
I wouldn't want to take the whole ladder down, have to flush the fish out and do it. No, I'm just thinking you keep the water in there, but you stop the flow. And would that work, guys? Can we do that? Bonneville?
On paper. I don't know how they're going to respond to that. You're talking about putting a diver in there at night?
Yeah, and actually just, we can't have them in there with the flow ripping through there, so you'd have to shut off the upper end of the channel, and then what happens to the water?
You'll have leakage around the bulkhead, and your water elevation in the channel will drop.
So we have a limited amount of time to work in there then. And you can't have it open on the other end. You don't want somebody falling out, floating down the ladder. So,
right,
got to be careful there.
You're going to end up taking Cascades Island to orifice flow for the most part, unless you open up the exit there.
Okay, Tammy, that's exactly what I was wondering. We'd have to open up the exit, and with spill going on, I don't really want to do that. So, of course, the way things are going, we're going to be down to nothing in spill anyway. But.
But it's not easy to close that exit and then drop the picket leads again unless you walk the channel, because we do get fish back up.
Yeah, no, let's not do that. Better off just go to orifice flow during the night, get this done, and then bring it all back up. If we did that.
So the option on the table is cut holes in the...
What about dive?
In the panel.
Allow that dive to...
Electrical folks say it's not a huge deal. It won't be.
Yeah, that's the question I have, is if you do that, I mean, from what I heard earlier, that lets you get an electrical field behind, and that could be an issue, particularly if we get lamprey or something holding in there for a period of time, longer exposure sort of thing. That's why I was wondering, can you kind of open and close it? I know that's complexity, but... Is there a way to simply make it open and closable over... I don't have a picture of it in front of me here, and I'm not sure how big of a slot we're talking about and the depth and all those things.
Well, that's kind of one of the questions I have, too. If we do cut a hole or cut a slot in it, what would be the best to allow fish through? Are we talking about a 1-inch wide slot that's 2 feet long, or are we talking about a series of 1.5-inch holes?
I was thinking more like a 1 or 2 inch slot that's long, and if you had a couple of, if you had some pieces of plastic on either side to kind of have a guide there, you could slide a piece of plastic down into there to close it off if you needed to.
Yeah, and would they be better vertically or horizontally?
I would think vertical.
Okay.
That gives fish at all depths a chance to get out.
you're thinking one continuous slot from top to bottom?
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking. You do one or two-inch slot from top to bottom, and then fish could just back out of there. You'd have flow through, and they would follow that out.
That sounds like that would weaken structurally the integrity of the of those panels.
Well, the panels aren't
structural. It's the frame.
Right. So all they're doing is keeping the field away from the inside of the channel, I guess, really.
Well, away from the concrete,
away from the permanent.
In the rebar, that's it. I'm sorry. Yeah, the other way around.
You're going to go that route. I mean, the only thing that I could suggest would be you'd probably have to cut a slot in on each side of each panel.
Right.
And there's
upstream, downstream.
Four panels per side.
So if each panel is approximately 10 feet long, I guess maybe a slot at the 5-foot mark down.
Top one and bottom one. Yeah, there's one panel per section.
Okay.
There's four sections and two sides, so 8 slots.
And these slots would be on the panel that's parallel to the wall?
Right.
How about another option, just a round hole?
Yeah.
Way easier to cut with a hole, rotating hole saw?
Right.
It's got to be a lot tougher to make.
Yeah, I'm just thinking what kind of underwater tool you have. It's got to be something.
You can use in here.
Well, you could, that would be easy to do, or you could also use a reciprocating type saw and just cut the vertical. But, do we care if they close or open again? That's kind of the question I have.
So, electrically, it doesn't matter if they are open.
No.
There's not much concern. I'm asking our electrical folks there. There's not much concern of stray voltage. And
not really, no.
Not that.
I mean, there will be, like I said, there will be some weak field if we cut slots in there, but it will be much weaker than what is actually inside that structure, just because there is very limited area for the electricity to get in through there.
And we're only talking there, Ray, to be on, what do we figure out, Matt, 8 hours the whole time?
Yeah, I'm not worried about that. Yeah, you're right. It'll be infrequent. It's not like it's constant.
All right, so to get a diagram there.
So 2-inch holes in each panel?
Are you talking about a single hole or a series of holes?
Well, if they're going to be as small as 2 inches, I think there'd better be a number of them.
Hey, any suggestions? We're open.
Well, Shane, I was thinking that vertically it's important to have multiple routes out.
Yeah.
That's why I was thinking the long slot. But if you just drilled a series of holes vertically, and I'm thinking close to the struts, that are in there, because that's where...
Downstream into the...
Downstream or up, maybe both. I don't know. Downstream for sure.
Yeah, downstream where the fish would be tending, like Tammy said, tending to follow them.
Try to flow out. But, John, you've probably watched these fish more than anybody else. Do you see a tendency for them to move anywhere?
No.
I was pretty amazed at your picture. It was like they were all holding a station just about 3 inches away from each other fish.
Yeah, if you look at those pictures, you'll notice one panel has a lot of fish and the other panel does not have as many.
Right.
There is a gap between those two panels, and they can swim between them. We've seen that, and they don't seem to be doing that. And it's dead water in there. There's no flow.
Well, there would be if there was a couple slots going through there. I think that would pull them out.
This is Tom Lewis. I got to go to grab some monkeys. I'll try to jump back on while I'm driving.
When they go into school late, they get out early?
When I have to pick them up.
Oh, man.
That's the joys. So what I'm going to suggest is, from our standpoint, and you guys can work it out later, and I'm sure I'll call back in. I would say we're open to letting you try the holes and see if you get something to work on that. Of course, we're going to want to have someone there taking a look when you turn the field on to make sure we're not causing issues for these fish. What this does lead to me, though, is I'm definitely not going to want to play this game with it once lamprey show up. There's just too few lamprey, and this is going to be supposed to be our primary lamprey passage through the UMT, through the new entrances. So as soon as we see lamprey, and if with a distant camera having problems seeing salmon, there's no way it's going to see lamprey. So whatever we think lamprey is going to show up, I think we're definitely done for that. I don't know what he thinks about the next big case if he wants to have the system up and running for the next big hatch release or not.
When do you think the lamprey show up, Tom?
Also, look historically, June-ish.
June.
Your favorite day in June.
Okay.
Yeah, we're down end of May, the current plan, so.
I think you'll be okay with that then. There may be a couple here and there, but the real population doesn't start.
Yeah, and I mean, my concern is, I mean, I'm willing to give you guys a shot. If we don't see these fish moving out and that kind of stuff, we're going to have to weigh potential impacts of getting this information this year as opposed to getting just pulling it out, making sure it's right next time, and do it again another year. I mean, I'm willing to give you guys a shot to try to get it to work if you think you can get in there and that. I'm going to be surprised if the project lets you throw a diver in the UMT at night since they won't even let a man bucket over to go clean a grate, so good luck with that one.
That's why I think they have to have the end gate closed on this thing.
Put your safety belt, though.
Well, one thing about the divers is that you have to remember we have to coordinate that through the district, and that does take a while. So if you're hoping to get done by the end of May, are you planning on sampling all 4 weeks of May? Because it'll take at least 2 weeks, usually, to get divers in place.
We're not going to have divers in there to drill these holes for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, there's a problem.
That's not an effective solution.
So could you stick a tool in there that rotates and drill the hole from above?
Is there a tool engineer friends of mine that we can do this from above?
We'll think about that.
There's a rod that rotates. It's like the stuff you use for your pruning your trees.
Right.
And then the project will have to determine if it's safe to work over water like that at night.
Yes. So, explore option, give us one day to explore an option of cutting holes from above. That's a proposal.
Yeah.
Yeah, the only thing that bothers me, that it's still an outstanding question mark.
If they get a dive,
if we're having any mortality, we're not going to be seeing it because they're going to sink or float away from the window.
Even if it's there.
So I guess trying to get a handle on what the real impact has been would be a big plus. No impact to the fish. They just get hung up for a little bit and they move on out, or everything that gets back there, there's a percentage dying.
Well, but would it be worth getting some kind of probe out there and assessing the gaps between the frames where you can to see if they can move back and forth, just for peace of mind?
Yeah,
that would help.
Yeah, I think you need to do that. At least it's tough to do, I think, from up above, especially given that there's no gap between the panels and the wall. But
there's something blocking it more than there's no gap. But there's something covering that.
It sounds to me like it'd be very hard to do that for the inner ribs. But if you could, Shane, that'd be great.
Yeah, how is that angle attached on top of the bolted to the panel?
But at the very least, you can see what happens at the top of the frame. That's you can do that visually.
Yeah. I mean, there might be an opportunity to wedge the stuff away from the concrete and create, loosen those turnbuckles.
Right.
Wedge the frame away from the walls.
Then you're creating gaps for some distance downstream, below your surface area there, along the frame.
Right. Making gaps.
Yeah. Making gaps. It's hard to measure what.
A way for them to get out if we did that.
Well, that's true.
Maybe
that doesn't.
Maybe 20 hindsight. Maybe that's the way it should have been designed, with a 1-inch gap or a 2-inch gap on each side, where adults couldn't get through, but juveniles wouldn't have a problem.
Yeah, we were trying to go the other way and make it.
Should have been concerned about lamprey getting in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but they'll keep moving through, I would think.
I think if we do this again, we design it so that we had some slots in there to allow things out. But
I suppose you, and of course the Smith Root guys are the ones that have to deal with this, but I guess you could loosen those turnbuckles, and if you picture that thing as kind of a U, you could sort of take the ends of the U and bend them in and put wedges in there.
That's exactly what I would be, exactly.
So that you could leave a 2-inch gap along the whole length of the thing on both sides, one side would probably be easier to work with than the other side, but
yeah.
The problem is that
hearing that?
Yeah.
I think it's Rod Serling.
Yeah.
Sounds a little bit like that. So there's cross members, I heard. I know there are.
They keep them from collapsing, but...
Right, so you'd have to shorten those.
Bigger hammer, more power.
You maybe could just force it a little bit with a wedge.
Yeah.
That would, yeah, that's, if you guys aren't concerned about the squareness of the thing, then that would allow fish egress from the top. Which would probably be pretty good, actually.
Is there a floor on this thing?
Yes.
Yeah.
So is this possibly happening along the floor as well?
Well, there is no... The space under the floor is actually open to the walls because the channel in the corner...
Okay.
So they could go around.
All right. Yeah.
So if anything's under it, they could get out at the top if the top was opened up a little bit.
Yeah.
Well, that's something to explore. That sounds more doable than a lot of these things.
Okay. So do we need...
That's up to the Smith Root guys. Do you think that that mess up your electric field in any way?
No. No, the shape of that.
Okay.
But you're only talking an inch or two.
Yeah.
So, I'm thinking I want to come by and see this thing. I'm going out to that Dal's dedication thing tomorrow, and I'm wondering if I might be able to come by in the early in the morning... Or in the afternoon afterwards.
You know, that's a darn good idea, Rick, because I'm having a hard time visualizing everything.
That's a very good idea. I can be out there to help coordinate.
I was planning to be out there doing an inspection in the morning so I can meet you guys there.
What time do you want to meet out there?
I plan to be there at 6:30.
Well, no, thank you.
Yeah, I'll, you know...
Come on, guys.
I would say, you know, this Dal's thing is, you know, I got to be at the Dal's by 12:30.
And you got to be there before so you don't walk in the middle of the thing.
It's 12:30 to be there, and 1 o'clock it starts.
Right.
Oh, it starts at 1. I thought it started at 12:30.
No, they say to be there at 12:30.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I would say we need to meet out at Bonneville no later than 9.
That works for me.
Okay.
What about the project?
Yeah. Come on out. And where do we meet? The Oregon side or the Washington side?
You got to go to the Washington side visitor center. It's right there.
Yeah, you can see it. Yeah, I guess
you don't have to go. You can probably see all you need to see from the public area.
Yeah, on the Washington side.
Good point.
Yeah. Is that open now? I didn't even realize that was open.
Yeah.
Can I throw one more thing on the table?
Yeah.
There?
Hello.
Could we turn the array on and start testing as soon as tomorrow?
Absolutely, 100% sure there's no field where those fish are trapped that they're going to get zapped.
So that's Scott?
Yeah. The reason I'm bringing it up is if we end up taking forever to make the whole drilling takes weeks, we may just end up pulling it out.
What are you talking on? Well, your voice sounds really garbled.
I'm in British Columbia, so somebody...
Ah.
It's metric.
It's that, yeah, I was going to say, it's the border.
Metric electron, yeah.
And Canadian beer.
We were thinking, Dave and I were talking about this, that I think that you have to at least watch to see what happens. I mean, Matt, you guys are there. If you see any negative reaction of fish in the window... Or somebody needs to be in that window and watching.
Can we turn it on at 9 o'clock when we're all standing there watching?
Yeah.
Matt?
Yeah, I mean...
That's how you're planning to get rid of us all, huh?
Hey, John, is there water? And Ben, is still there's still water down in that room?
There is.
Yeah, there is.
I got it.
On that door?
I think I've got something else to do tomorrow.
Well, so, yeah, I think the testing that was going to be done, it was supposed scheduled for today, it was just some re-evaluation by Smith Root just to get the settings dialed in to double check that when we say 0.6 volt per centimeter, that's what we're getting, and then also to work with Chris on the system, and then the U of I wanted to run a radio tag through there to see if there was going to be any problems with with the electrical array interfering with tags or just damaging tags. But that's different than starting
tension
R testing. We're going to do that after all this took place.
So the test of the radio tag interference, is that while the array is run at the sort of the level you expect to run in a real situation?
Yeah, it was, and I would imagine that they probably would have wanted to take the array through its paces and start off low and work up a little bit higher and higher and higher, but I couldn't imagine that it would be on for very long, certainly not like we would plan on testing it, so...
Well, again, the only thing I would, I would need some confirmation that as you're proceeding through each of these steps, there's no visible indication of impact on the fish that are trapped.
Well, let's, can we explore the option of moving those walls in a little more? I'm wondering about time, Dave, how long it takes, how long they can get, it would take them to get this done.
What I'm proposing is we get out there tomorrow and do this.
Okay, and then so you could wait, instead of subjecting the Spring Creek fish to potential electrical fields, at least all of them, you could open this up a bit, then test, start your testing.
Maybe not tomorrow. We could open that by tomorrow. Oh, no.
It just depends on the delay. I mean, if you can delay only a couple of days, that's not a big deal, but...
So you don't want to turn it on while the fish are in there and the...
I think they will be even when you open this thing up. It's going to take a while for them to get out.
Oh, they'll run right through.
I hope so, but I have a suspicion it'll take a bit of time, and during that time you could actually do a couple of tests to see what happens.
Well, I'm putting folks on the spot now. Can the Smith Root folks start on this tomorrow? Loosen those turbuckles and...
I don't think you need to loosen the turbuckles.
Or whatever you need to do.
You need to drive a wedge in.
And as far as I'm concerned, if you're going to try to open the gaps up, that's fine. And no problems from my perspective.
What kind of disturbance do you anticipate around the ladder, clanging and banging, people over the top of the ladder or the UMT, or how much disturbance?
They'd have to design a wedge, and then it would be drive it in three or four whacks with a... Shouldn't take much.
This is just at the very top of the frame?
Very top of the frame.
And then you'll tighten the turnbuckle on the wedge so you have your support, right?
No, I don't think we'd even touch the turnbuckles. We'll just bend the vertical member.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they're plastic, so there's some flex.
Yeah.
Hey, Ben. Is the safety office going to approve them working over water so that they can do it on the other side, or do you guys just need the one side, just to access the one side of the array? Or do you need the upstream wall that where you'd have to be working over water?
Well, I can't imagine that we want to take the chance that not do this to the other wall.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
So, Ben, how long does it take the safety office to approve that kind of activity hazard analysis?
I'll go down and talk to them as soon as this is done, but I need to know what we're proposing to do.
I think if we can do it from the low wall, we can do it from the high wall. It's just a longer rod.
Yeah, I was thinking you'd stand right on the deck, 90 deck.
Yeah, they don't need to work out of the water.
Yeah, I just get a wedge on a longer hole. I mean, it's going to look kind of funky. We'll have to think about the public messing with it.
They have to be guided in from the other side.
And that's part of the reason I was asking if we could turn the array on and get some testing, because it's going to take some time to get the safety officer comfortable and make some of these changes.
Well, if we're not working over water.
Well, if you can get it done quick, that's great. But if there's a delay... I would also like to get some testing in, just in case we end up going a week and saying, okay, it's too long, we're just taking it out.
Yeah.
I'd like to get a little testing in.
Well, I mean, before we test it, you need to consider the juveniles, and one option I hear is it's probably going to take a day or two to open those frames up, you know, get the wedges and get them pounded and, you know, make sure we're doing it at the right time of day. And if you do turn it on, you need to see the effect.
position, so I don't have to go to my supervisors and say, well, we're kind of guessing, but we think it's okay.
Well, I think that would constitute an observation, even videoing the fish reaction in the window.
Well, yeah, I was figuring that's our only place to observe anything.
Right, so that needs to be on the table, that there has to be somebody there observing when you energize the system, preferably with a video camera, show folks what happened. But what I hear from what folks are telling me, there shouldn't be any reaction at all.
I don't expect to see any, quite honestly. These fish are very small, and this field is not intended to affect adults, and small fish are much, much more difficult
right.
to affect with an electric field.
I completely understand that, the whole reasoning behind that. I guess I would just feel better knowing that we had at least some form of confirmation. These fish are all part of USV Oregon mitigation, and if anybody raises the question that we can't answer, we're going to have a lot of explaining to do.
Right. So we can take care of that for you, Dave.
Okay, thanks.
We're filming today. We'll bring a tripod and a video camera, and we'll set it up down in that room. So if they start off where I think they should start off, probably at 0.6 volts per centimeter, we can try to have a camera entrained on that window.
Yeah.
And see what it is we see when the power is turned on.
All right. Now, I understand that the design and everything is supposed to be insulating that area from the electric field, but
they don't cut holes
back there in the first place. So who knows what can happen? I just want to make sure.
Okay, so it sounds like from what I'm hearing, they can go ahead and do the testing tomorrow, start testing first those, and the first initial energizing, monitor those fish in a trap for any reaction. If we see no reaction, then you move forward with your testing. In the meantime, as soon as possible, wedge open the top of the frame to allow fish out for the rest of the season. So fish will get in there, but they can get out.
Well, we hope so. Yeah, we're going to have to kind of do some observations.
Sure. But, I mean, that's the thought.
Yep.
That's the go-ahead.
Yep.
And the schedule for that option is unknown, but the project will look into the safety parts of it. But it basically ASAP.
Yes.
And I presume we will wedge every frame except the very upstream one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, does the work of putting in the wedges, does that have to be done at night?
Well, I'm struggling with that because it should be. We're getting a lot of fish coming through. What about, our morning hours are the highest passage. I was just wondering about late evening, maybe not necessarily at night, but I don't know. What do you guys at the project think of that? I'm okay with them doing some work in the day, but...
Make a difference with the project.
Yeah, I think the issue out here, as soon as you make it, something's going to happen, and at night we're going to have a safety problem with it.
Okay, so why don't we work in the late afternoon?
Give us the time and we'll be there.
I guess we usually try to go middle of the day, don't we?
Yeah, I was thinking 1:00.
Yeah.
What's this again, though?
This is when they would go in and actually do the disturbance in the ladder to wedge these frames open. They're going to have, they're going to be banging around, and so there will be fish in the UMT at the time, and this will disturb adult passage for a little while. So the timing is important. We don't want to do this in the morning, but I was thinking, we normally do things, you guys, Ben, didn't you guys put out some sort of, I think all the projects had something in the fish passage plan about fish timing and the best times to do this?
If you look at the fish count webpage, it looks...
Is that where it is? Okay.
Yeah, the lowest passage appears to be, according to this, about 8 to 10 in the morning.
Okay. Well, that was the intent of that, was to use that as for that purpose. So I would, use that.
8 to 10 in the morning is the low period?
According to this dial distribution, a Chinook runs through Washington Shore. Yes.
Yeah, and that's typically it's the early morning, like 5 to 7 o'clock is the big run, and then things slack off, and then it picks up again in the evening. But
so that's based on the count window at the Washington Ladder?
Yeah, it's 2000. It's the average for 2005 through 2008 estimated counts.
At the okay, at the ladder. So what's the time travel time from where this array is to the count window? What's the, you know, does it take fish an hour or half a day to get up there?
I would say minutes.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, there's no weirs.
See one from the others.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure we were accounting for any passage timing.
And there's no elevation change, I don't think. And there's no weirs there. It's just a straight shot for the fish.
Talk okay. About that. We have in the fish passage plan a preferred.
Well, I guess, yeah, let's use that then, Tammy. I mean, that's the purpose of that.
Yes.
So I'll start at 8 a.m.
That seems early to me, but. That's what the data say. That's what it says.
Yeah.
It might be 8:30.
I would have said maybe 11 till 5 or something like that.
That's when passage actually starts increasing. Is it at about 11 o'clock?
Jeez. Okay.
Oh, really? Tammy, are you saying that it's low up until that point? What web page is this?
Go. If you go to the fish count page and then you scroll down a little bit, it's on the fish passage plan. These are the diel graphs that were supposed to be in the fish passage plan, but they're on the fish count page instead.
That's where they are.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the adult fish count page?
Yeah.
Hey, you guys, I got to run, so are we going
I think we're
to
good.
Washington Source Center in the morning?
Sounds like you're working, Matt, tomorrow.
So at what time was that?
9 o'clock.
Except you have to be there at 6 with the coffee and donuts.
Absolutely.
I'll check my schedule.
So we'll meet at 9, go look at that system, and then go down below and watch as the energize. Is that kind of 1, 2, 3? And see the responsible small fish?
That works for me.
Okay. Okay.
Shane, or Tammy, I just need clarification on where to go exactly.
Washington Visitor Center.
Okay.
Now
do you come in through that big gated area, or do you go down around near the lower end?
Dave, you got to go down to the lower end. They've got that upper one by the Visitor Center closed.
Okay.
So go down the north or the west end there and come in past the guard shack. You come up the access road.
Come up to the guard shack.
Yep.
Okay, very good.
And we'll meet you guys over there. If we know who's coming, we'll bring some badges over there, and you can see most of it from the public area, but if you want to come down and see the count window and stuff, we got to go through the project. So if you want to just meet us there, we'll bring badges and take you guys where you want to go.
Okay, that works then.
So, Tammy, the Spring Chinook looks like it's pretty level for the morning hours, isn't it? And then it sort of slides up a little bit after 11?
Yeah, I was looking at
that. The purple line?
Yeah. So it looks like it dips a little bit at 8, 9 o'clock.
So, Smith Root guys, how long do you think this will take?
To turn it on?
To turn it on or to drive the wedges?
Drive the wedges.
Well, that won't happen tomorrow. But
I know. I'm just, for planning purposes.
Oh, an hour or so, maybe?
Hour or so.
So, per side.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, you gotta be realistic. I know how these things can be.
Hey, Gary, how about a 2-hour window every day till I get it done?
Well, I don't know if I go quite that far, but I was thinking a couple of days, 2-hour windows.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. What from when to when?
Well, it looks to me like you could start at 8 in the morning and go through 11 if you wanted to, or 8 to 10, 8 to 11, somewhere in there, 2-3 hours.
Okay.
But Tammy, I'm not finding these graphs you're looking at.
Ben, you needed a list of folks showing up tomorrow?
Dave, I'll send you the website.
Well, I'm on the adult web. I mean,
I'll go down to towards the end of the block. The I'll back up here. I'm not looking at it anymore.
Is the adult
where the annual fish passage reports are?
Yeah, that's the page I'm on.
Next one down. Next square down. It says fish ladder diel across the day.
Ah, okay.
how we can do this with
you. Click on Chinook, and then you'll see the first one will come up will be Bradford. Then you want to go to the next one down is Washington.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Hey, Ben?
Yes?
Did you need a list of folks?
Yeah, are they guys that are badged already?
Yeah, besides, we're all bad, just went through.
All I'm looking for is guys that are coming out that aren't bad that are going to be wanting to go over there.
And right. Dave Wells, Rick Kruger, and Gary, I don't know what your status is.
Oh, he's good.
I got more badges I know what to do with.
Yeah, Ben, I've got two or three people coming with me to go up to that ceremony at the Dow. Do you need their names too?
Taylor's
you know them offhand?
Could probably be done by a field unit.
Or can you send them to me? Yeah, I'll send them to you. Stuff. Email them. That works. Okay.
O&M. And that is Tom Lohr's on the phone?
He jumped off.
I don't know if he was back. I put him on. Okay. Like
that. Oh, yeah, he made it come back. I didn't hear any beeps, though. So, yeah.
It's a huge change for Taylor, though.
I don't know if he'll be there or not.
Yeah. What time do you guys want to be over there?
He's overseeing it, though. I mean, he's overseeing
it. I heard 9, wasn't it?
9, okay.
Yeah.
Can he That'll oversee work. A stencil employee?
Ben, do you have a cell phone you feel comfortable giving out over this public airwave in case we need to get in touch with you? Sure.
971-409-4499.
Thank you.
For that person. I don't know, let's bring it up to him.
Okay.
No prank calls, guys.
Sooner or later,
if I start getting prank calls in this route, I'll know who to come back to.
All right, and Ben, anybody who's coming from Smith Route will have an access badge.
Sounds good. Thanks, Brandon.
All right, man.
Sounds like we have a path forward.
All righty, we'll see folks out there at 9 a.m. Washington Visitor Center.
Yes.
I appreciate your work on this, folks. I know this is a pain in the neck, and you've all dropped a lot of work to help us. But
all right. Well,
you're done.
I'll look back on this someday and laugh.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Birthing pains. Okay. We'll see you later.